Good morning and welcome to the Acromegaly Update for Monday, May 11th, 2026. Two segments today. First, the new acromegaly literature, where the week's slate is dominated by long-term real-world data on existing therapies and a couple of interesting drug delivery and rare genetic disease threads. And then in the second half, the wider rare disease industry, where a $4.1 billion takeover and a notable FDA reversal are the stories worth your time. Let's start with the acromegaly research. The headline paper this week is in Pituitary, a letter to the editor responding to the final analysis of the ACROSS study cohort on long-term pegvisomant monotherapy. ACROSS study is the longest-running real-world dataset we have on the growth hormone receptor antagonist, and the authors of this correspondence are pushing on the practical questions clinicians are still asking. How do IGF-1 normalization rates actually compare across baseline tumor size and prior treatment? How aggressive should we be with pituitary MRI and liver monitoring intervals given the pooled long-term safety signals? There is no new dataset here, but the letter is a useful clinical sanity check on how those final ACROSS study findings should translate into day-to-day dose titration for the patients in front of you. The second paper is a systematic review in the Journal of Medical Economics on the cost-effectiveness of pasireotide long-acting release. Pasireotide LAR sits as a second-line option for patients who have failed or cannot tolerate first-generation somatostatin receptor ligands, and payer perceptions of its value have been all over the map. The authors pull together every published cost-effectiveness model, score the methodology, and lay out which design choices are driving the widespread in published cost-effectiveness ratios. The big swing factors turn out to be comparator selection, the time horizon used, how the model handles pasireotide-associated hyperglycemia, and crucially, how authors translate biochemical control into long-term outcomes. If you sit on a formulary committee or get pulled into payer conversations, this is a useful framing piece. Third, out of the Mexican Social Security system, an observational comparison of octreotide LAR versus lanreotide autogel in acromegaly, but scored using the Sagitt instrument rather than GH and IGF-1 alone. Sagitt explicitly incorporates signs and symptoms, comorbidities, biochemistry, tumor profile, and treatment burden, so it gets closer to the patient experience than biochemical control rates. Head-to-head real-world data between the two long-acting somatostatin receptor ligands are scarce, and this is a clinically grounded look at whether they really differ on anything beyond biochemistry in a population whose access patterns force the question. Fourth, a review out of the Liège group on the genome architecture of X-linked acrogigantism, or XLAG. XLAG is the severe pediatric end of the growth hormone excess spectrum, driven by duplications involving GPR101 on the X chromosome, and it presents in infancy with rapid linear growth and combined GH, IGF-1, and prolactin elevation. The Liège team, who originally characterized the syndrome, focuses on what is now understood about the topologically associating domains around GPR101 and how disruption of the local chromatin architecture appears to drive the somatotrophic phenotype. It is relevant for the acromegaly community because XLAG sits on a continuum with sporadic somatotropinomas and informs how we think about gigantism cases with unusual molecular signatures. And finally, on the research side, a formulation paper in the International Journal of Pharmaceutics. The FDA-approved oral octreotide capsule achieves roughly 0.7% systemic bioavailability, clinically adequate, but a long-standing target for improvement. This group reports hydrophobic ion pairing of octreotide with sodium deoxycholate and shows that the resulting solid dispersion increases lipophilicity and engages the intestinal bile acid transporter to improve permeability in preclinical models. It is mechanism of delivery work, not clinical data, but oral somatostatin analog therapy is one of the most active near-term levers in the acromegaly toolbox, and incremental wins here genuinely matter for patient adherence. Now, zooming out from acromegaly to the wider rare disease industry, four real stories this week plus one important context piece. The biggest one is M&A. Angelini Pharma, the Italian privately held drug company, agreed last Thursday to buy Catalyst Pharmaceuticals for roughly $4.1 billion in cash. Catalyst is the Florida-based maker of Firdapse for Lambert-Eaton myasthenic syndrome and two other approved rare disease products. The price, $31.50 a share, is a 28% premium to the 30-day average before the deal leaked in late April. For Angelini, the deal is essentially their entry ticket into the U.S. market and a deepening of their neurology franchise. For the rest of the rare disease world, it is one more data point that strategic buyers will pay full premium multiples for de-risked rare disease commercial assets, particularly in neurology, which is supportive for valuations across the small cap peer set. Second, the FDA has reversed course on Ebvallo. Pierre Fabre and Atara Biotherapeutics said this week that in a late April meeting, the FDA agreed their completed single-arm trial of Ebvallo in EBV-positive post-transplant lymphoproliferative disease is in fact sufficient to support review and possible approval. That directly walks back the agency's main reason for rejecting the drug in January, which had been a critique of the same trial as flawed and insufficient. The original review was run by the Center for Biologics under Vinay Prasad, who departed the agency at the end of April. Stats framing, and I think it is right, is that the original rejection was part of a pattern in which senior FDA officials had been raising the bar on rare disease drugs, and the reversal is a meaningful softening of that stance. If you develop in a small, hard-to-randomize indication, this is the most encouraging signal you have had in months. Third, Cytokinetics had a clean phase 3 win. The company reported last Tuesday that aficamten, sold as Mycorzo, hit both co-primary endpoints, heart failure symptoms and cardiovascular fitness, with statistical significance in non-obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in the trial called Acacia. Mycorzo is already approved in the obstructive form of HCM, and a non-obstructive label expansion would substantially enlarge the eligible patient population. Sell-side analysts have peak sales forecasts in the $5 billion range. Beyond Cytokinetics itself, this is a story about the second cardiac myosin inhibitor franchise, now spanning the HCM spectrum and tightening the competitive squeeze on Bristol-Myers Squibb's mavacamten. Fourth, a setback. Entrada Therapeutics reported that its next-generation exon-skipping candidate for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, designed for patients with mutations amenable to exon 44 skipping, came in below expectations in an early clinical study. The next-gen exon skippers as a class are designed to deliver markedly higher dystrophin levels than Sarepta's original Exondys, and competitors at Avidity, Wave, and Dyne have been clearing that bar in earlier work. So a soft Entrada readout raises real questions about its position in a crowded field. Expect Duchenne investors to reprice next-gen exon-skipping risk and concentrate further on the leaders with cleaner phase 1 and 2 data. And the context piece, falling just outside the 7-day window, but worth a 30-second mention because of how directly it bears on rare disease economics. Pfizer settled patent litigation with three generic challengers on tafamidis, the active ingredient in Vyndaqel and Vyndamax. The settlements extend tafamidis exclusivity through June 1, 2031, pushing back what had been a 2028 cliff. Tafamidis is the market leader in transthyretin-mediated cardiomyopathy with roughly $6.4 billion in sales last year. The deal protects multiple billions of Pfizer revenue and reshapes the competitive math for BridgeBio's Atrubi, Alnylam's Amvuttra, and the AstraZeneca Ionis program in late-stage testing. Looking ahead, the acromegaly slate this week was about long-term real-world data and drug delivery, no new pivotal trial data, and the next watch points are paltusotine, oral somatostatin formulations, and combination strategies into the back half of the year. On the industry side, the bigger signal is the Ebvallo reversal and what it says about a post-Prasad CBER. If the agency is genuinely more willing to credit single-arm packages and feasibility of trial arguments, that is a tailwind for any rare disease developer, acromegaly included, that has been weighing a smaller and faster registration trial. Combine that with the Catalyst takeout and the Pfizer tafamidis defense, and the message of the week is consistent. Strategics will still pay for clean rare disease commercial cash flows, and the regulatory rails for getting there look, for now, a bit friendlier than they did in January. That's the Acromegaly Update for Monday, May 11th. Thanks for listening.